Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only, Dan Z, and I are recording this on Tuesday, March 3rd, Super Tuesday. A lot of news has broken, Dan, since we last recorded a new podcast. In fact, we were just pre-gaming a moment ago, and you were saying you're still kind of bummed about what happened with Steven Spielberg.
Oh, I'm really bummed about it. I'm not going to say I'm depressed because I it's not like I know it or have any vested interest financially, but Indiana Jones is my favorite franchise, and we're looking at a new Indiana Jones without George Lucas. Mm-hmm. And now to not have it without Spielberg, who's, you know, the other co-creator of this thing, that just gives me a bad feeling that this thing is not going to get made.
Well, kind of interesting. For those of you who missed this announcement, it was back on February 24th, I want to say, the Monday. First, we learned that Steven Spielberg was stepping away from directing Indiana Jones 5. And then pretty much on that same day, we learned that James Mangold, he's the gentleman who directed Ferrari versus Ford, which was up for a lot of Academy Awards this past year. But more importantly, Logan from 2017, he's going to pick up the reins at Indy 5. And which, by the way, Dan, was working the phones. People at Disney are still insisting this thing is coming out July 9th, 2021.
That's good. That's good.
Now, I'll tell you what, folks, Dan and I will do a deep dive on this second half of the show today. But first, let's, again, a lot of news. So, okay, Dan, let's start by talking about the return of Clone Wars, the animated series. Now, the first two episodes of season 7 have already aired on Disney Plus, and what did you think of them?
I absolutely love them. I think the animation, you can definitely tell it's got a fresh sheen, fresh coat of paint to it, but it still has that same kind of look about it. Mm-hmm. The voice acting is, of course, fantastic. The Bad Batch is much more captivating than I expected. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It literally feels like you're just back home, like I was years ago, sitting on the couch with my older boys. And now I'm watching it with the little guy, and he's absolutely riveted too. I think it's great. And when you find out that George wanted to do about 300 of these things, of course, that's not going to happen. It just makes me lament that this is the last season. But we're getting a really proper send-off. What do you think about it?
Well, I have to admit, I'm impressed by the animation. Production design is outstanding. And you're right, voice work is dead on. But the interesting thing is, you know, I'm at a disadvantage. I mean, before season 7 of Clone Wars, started airing on Disney Plus, I tried to do my due diligence, and I kind of went overboard. And I started all the way back with the Gennady Tartakovsky Clone Wars.
It's not even related to this.
Well, that's what I find fascinating, because again, you know, these began airing. Well, first of all, what was it? Star Wars: Attack of the Clones arrives in theaters May 16th, 2002, and then starting in November 2003, this hand drawn series. But again, it's interesting. They called it a micro series, debuts in the Cartoon Network, and it's supposed to bridge the gap between Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith. With three seasons in total were produced, with the final episode of Season 3 of the Clone Wars micro-series airing on Cartoon Network in March 25, 2005. Did you make it to Celebration 3 in Indianapolis in that year?
I did. That was the first one I ever went to. It was way before Coffee with Kenobi was a twinkle in my proverbial eye. But, yep, I did. And George was at that one, although I missed him.
Well, but see, now that's what intrigues me. Okay, so you have this micro series was acclaimed. It was difficult to watch because the first two seasons came in 3 to 5 minute long batches.
And then, right.
I guess season three was done in 15 minute chunks. So it's about total 2 hours of this stuff.
Yeah. I still have my DVD copy too, by the way, which you can't find anywhere.
Really? Okay. Yeah. But here's the thing. That's ended March 25th, 2005. And here's George on stage in April of 2005, you know, what, less than a month, you know, after, you know, the Clone Wars animated series, the hand-drawn version, finishes up on Cartoon Network, and he's talking about how we're working on a 3D continuation of the series from Cartoon Network. Though I guess at that point they won't start on it for another year, and, you know, then of course in May of that year, Revenge of the Sith arrives in theaters. But, you know, I guess in July of 2005, Steve Sansweet is out there talking about the key difference between this new animated series that Lucasfilm Television is doing. It's not going to be 3 to 5 minutes long or 15 minutes long. It's episodes that are 30 minutes long. And the style is going to, well, this is, I love this story. When they were looking for a style for the 3D animation, they of course wanted to build on, you know, some of the design work that Gennady had done. But it turns out that George was a huge fan of, do you remember the Thunderbird show, Dan?
Yes, I think it's a little creepy.
Well, it turns out George was a fan. He particularly loved those wooden puppets. And so that's why, at least for the first couple of seasons of Star Wars Clone Wars, the CG version, they were this weird marriage between, you know, say, Gennady's hand-drawn stylization of Obi-Wan and Anakin and the like, but also puppets. So, you know, again, that's why it looks like the way it does. But George lifts the veil on the series in March of 2007. He talks about, I mean, you mentioned 300 episodes. Initially, he's talking about, over 100 episodes of the show have been planned. And at that point, Boba Fett, the first time they hinted that Boba Fett might make an appearance to the show. But George was particularly excited about Ahsoka Tano, a new character that had been created for that series.
Ahsoka Tano is, yeah, one of the best things to happen to Star Wars.
Well, but here's what I find fascinating. After having watched the Gennady Tartakovsky, hand-drawn version, there's a character called, see if I'm pronouncing it right, Shaak Ti,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
So she's the first female Jedi, and she appears to be from the same planet or species of Ahsoka Tano.
She has the same species as Ahsoka, Shaak Ti. Let me think about that. I got to think about that. But there was a female Jedi in The Phantom Menace, so mm-hmm. There's others before her.
Okay. But again, she's this really kick-ass character, and likewise, I guess, and Asajj Ventress.
Asajj Ventress, yep.
Okay, she's also introduced in the show, and Dark Sister? How do they describe her?
She starts out being Count Dooku's assassin, mm-hmm. and then throughout the course of the series, eventually Dooku turns on her at the request of Palpatine because he doesn't want them to try to, you know, take him out. And mm-hmm. so then she recruits, it's a long story, but then she's a Night Sister. That's what she okay. is. She ends okay. up becoming a bounty hunter, and then she ends up becoming good too.
Oh, interesting.
She's great.
Well, and likewise, Padme has a couple of story arcs and that sort of thing. And it's interesting that there is female representation in the Gennady Tartakovsky version of Clone Wars, but it seems like George decided there needed to be more, which is, I think, where Ahsoka Tano came in. And obviously Ahsoka Tano becomes a huge, huge part of the Clone Wars animated series. So, again, just to bring this full circle. So again, I'm doing all of this prep work. So you know, but then, you know, season seven starts. And Drew was telling me that he had previously seen these episodes in animatic form. I guess they were called the Lost shows.
Yeah, the lost episodes. They were on StarWars.com for years, all the way back to Celebration Anaheim in 2015. Yeah, there's animatics for them.
So you got to see those as well. So that's got to be kind of intriguing to have seen them in that rough form, and now to see them, you know, in full animation and polished and with great color and that sort of thing.
It's stunning. And you know, they would have looked different if they were made originally. Mm-hmm. And that was done, you know, 10 years ago, or when, not 10 years ago, but when they made them back in 2007. They just look so much better. But yeah, it's a similar idea, similar story. I think they re-recorded the voice work for it, though.
Okay. If I have one quibble.
Okay.
And again, minor quibble. I think about this. When The Mandalorian started on Disney Plus, somebody who walked in the door who didn't know a whole lot about Star Wars could still get the story, could still enjoy the story, could get involved in these characters. I think that's one of the reasons why it became, you know, this pop culture phenomena. You know, people, you know, it became appointment viewing. On the other hand, Clone Wars, the fact that these, you know, we're still, you know, people are walking through the door and it's now episode 7, and you have, and don't get me wrong, I know of Rex. In fact, you know, that's what's kind of interesting, to meet the younger Rex after getting to know him through Star Wars Rebels.
Right.
It's kind of intriguing for me, you know, but I just kind of feel bad for somebody who's coming through the door and is like, wow, here's this, you know, this heavily hyped, Star Wars Clone Wars show. And, you know, so I sit down and it's like, you know, episode 1, season 7. And, you know, you're kind of dropped in the deep end narratively.
The nice thing about Clone Wars is that while there are 7 seasons now, it's not told sequentially. In fact, there's all kinds of articles you can find, or StarWars.com has them too, where the actual chronological order is, but you can watch them in arcs and not really be lost. I mean, you'll miss some of the subtle nuance of the evolution of Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her relationship with Anakin, different things that Rex encounters. But for the most part, you really don't need much catch up. As long as you've seen episode 2, you're pretty much ready for Clone Wars, no matter where you fall.
Okay. Okay.
It's kind of fresh. It's very much like a mythology, like the old Greek mythology. You don't have to know all of them to kind of get the point.
That's an excellent analogy. I will say this much, you know, that quibble aside, I really am waiting to see episode 3 and to see where this goes. And speaking of waiting and looking at something genuinely intriguing, let's talk about Star Wars: The High Republic.
Yes.
Now, how long have you known about Project Luminous? Because they supposedly did some talking about this at Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah, it was announced in April of 2019 at New York Comic Con. Does that sound right?
I
don't know if it was Comic Con, but yeah, it's been around. We've been known about it for almost a year. That teased it out, and then I was invited to go to the Disney Studios for the big unveiling, but I had another prior engagement. I did a huge series of education interviews and podcasts for a place called IdeaCon in Chicago. So that can be pretty busy, but I'm glad you're bringing this up because I think it's pretty rich.
Well, I for those of you who haven't heard the announcement, okay, so Star Wars the High Republic is an ambitious multimedia project where noted authors such as Kevan Scott, Claudia Gray, Chara Soule, Daniel Jose Elder, and Justine Ireland have been invited to write books, comic books, I want to say games, And
it's not, it's only publishing.
Publishing. Okay. But again, the conceit of this is that it's a series of interconnected stories set 200 years before the Phantom Menace, when the Jedi were at the height of their power. Did you get to take a look at the trailer with a lot of the concept art that they're looking to do? Or
oh yes, yes, I watched mm-hmm. it like I was analyzing the Kennedy assassination. I definitely watched it with a great detail.
Okay, yes. You know, and I have to admit, I love the tease line. You know, to the effect of what scares the Jedi.
Yes, and the Nile, you know, is how it's pronounced. The villains.
Yeah, and so yes, and they're described as basically space Vikings. Is that correct?
Yeah, like a Sid Vicious in space is how they describe it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And I actually have an interesting theory about this whole thing too, because the thing that motivated them, they met in Skywalker Ranch in the summer of 2018, mm-hmm. and there's this, you know, the video as you mentioned, you know, beautifully mm-hmm. sort of plays that out. Mm-hmm. But nihilism is a belief in nothing. So
there you go. All right. Again, I was wondering yes. if that was the jumping off point for that name.
That's my okay. theory. You know, that's just my belief, but just using mm-hmm. etymology. But, you know, if the Jedi had this full belief in the Force, which, you know, connects all living things together, and nihilism mm-hmm. is the opposite, where you believe in nothing and there is no purpose or mm-hmm. Intent to anything. So that would, to me, that would scare the Jedi the most, someone who believes in nothing, because it's the opposite of what the mm-hmm. Jedi believe. I think it's pretty cool. Plus, nihilism is also absence of light, and Project mm-hmm. Luminous is clearly about light. So this, it's adding up pretty well.
You have done your homework. See, this is why I enjoy doing this podcast with you.
Thank you.
You tease these things out, you know, these threads. Okay, so again,
Andrew,
you know,
Taylor could never do something like that.
Now, again, you know, to be clear here, they kept hammering the point that they're trying for cohesive storytelling. So the books will support the comics and the like. And again, with the idea of everything comes together to tell a story about a previously untold age in Star Wars canon. But, you know, the interesting thing is they've been kind of hiding in plain sight because I guess, what is it? The very first time High Republic got mentioned was there was a April 2019 audio drama, Dooku Jedi Lost.
Which Kevin Scott wrote.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's great. Oh. It's fantastic. So it's basically Dooku's origin.
Okay, now I have to chase that down. And the Nile Raiders, I guess, were just recently mentioned in The Lost Tales Part 1, which is a Star Wars adventure published by IDW Publishing. But that was as recently as January 29th of this year. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I'm really looking forward to this. And forgive me if I'm bringing up something sensitive here, though. I can't help but think when something like the High Republic comes along about the expanded universe.
Sure.
You know, I mean, face it, out ahead of The Force Awakens, the expanded universe got retconned in April 2014, and all sorts of characters that Star Wars fans got to know and love through books and games and comics were simply taken off the canvas with only, what, the six previous Star Wars films, the original trilogy and the prequels, and... And again, oddly enough, the Star Wars Clone Wars and CG animated series and film, right. those were considered canon. And
which makes sense because George worked on Clone Wars up until season 7.
I completely understand. Mm-hmm. But I have to wonder how many longtime Star Wars fans are, because they got burned with the, you know, the expanded universe with and in fact, what's interesting is how many pieces of the expanded universe after, they got changed into the, Star Wars Legends. Is that what they're called now?
Yeah. Star Wars Legends. That's right.
But it's interesting to see how, you know, how individual characters that were declared Star Wars Legends then got sort of folded back into the canon, you know, as people were working on films and stories, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, you know,
sure,
what about that chunk? Let's bring that back.
Dave has mined the Legends line quite a bit, Dave Filoni. Mm-hmm. And what I like, and mm-hmm. When this actually happened, Steve Sansweet was on, mm-hmm. and he went on record, at least on Coffee with Kenobi, and said, the Expanded Universe is not canon. It was never canon. It was always an extension. That's why it's the Expanded Universe. So mm-hmm. it didn't wipe them out. I mean, they certainly aren't in the modern canon, at least the way that they used to be. But mm-hmm. they still exist, and anyone can go to your library or go to a bookstore and still find those books. So it's there. I always told people, think of, if you know your Arthurian lore and legend, and similar to Greek mythology, there are a lot of different versions of the Arthurian legend. Mort Arthur is by Sir Thomas Malory is the most famous, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of different versions of the Knights of the Round Table. So that's just kind of what this is like too. And they would just pop up in different things. So again, Dave and Lucasfilm, they mine the Legends line for things and pull them in. So yeah, it's hard not to think of the High Republic and just sort of, you know, the old Star Wars video games of the old Republic and things like that. So mm-hmm. it will be fun to see if there's any kind of cross-pollination.
Well, now, it's interesting you use that word, because when I was talking with friends at Disney this week, what they, and the interesting thing, what the way the studio considers Star Wars The High Republic is in much the same way that, say, you know, the comic books that Marvel Entertainment publishes often create the characters and storylines that are then used for the films, you know, the interconnecting films that Marvel Studios makes. And, you know, as far as Walt Disney Studios is concerned, Star Wars The High Republic is basically the incubator for, you know, possible theatrical films, possible limited series for Disney Plus. You know, so they're really excited about it. And, you know, in fact, I guess the initial wave of books and comic books arrives this fall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They all, the dates, August, is when the first novel comes out by Charles Soule. And oh yeah, mm-hmm. that's going to be, they're going to basically once a month, things are coming out.
Okay. Well, okay. I got to expand my reading list. Okay. All right. Well, again, we were just talking about, limited series for Disney Plus, which of course brings to mind The Mandalorian. I have to ask, last week, as Toy Fair was going on at the Javits Center, did you see any of the coverage of the child Baby Yoda toys?
Oh yeah, and that's something else I was invited to, but I can't clone myself, so I didn't make it out to New York. But yeah, there was some great looking stuff. Did you see there is a Baby Yoda Chia pet? All your dreams have come true. Or hopefully Nancy won't listen. You could get it for maybe Christmas or something.
Wow. I just, you know, as a bald guy, I always envied the Chia Pets. So yeah, maybe I'll be borrowing that miracle seed. You know, and did you have a particular favorite? I mean, I know a lot of people were excited, I guess, by a kind of animatronic Yoda.
Yeah, that thing is pretty cool. I do like the one quite a bit. I just think it's fascinating that there's so many items out there. The one I got was the sideshow one. That's the 1:1 scale one. Mm-hmm. I ordered that one. Although that was revealed maybe a little bit before Toy Fair. But what about you?
Well, you know, it's, I have to admit, I'm really more of a fan of the more stylized version, the Funko Pop figures. Sure. You know, but again, I guess I'm going to have to see these things in person, though, as I understand it. You know, for example, so you know the orders that have been made for Target, they've gone clean. I mean, these items literally haven't arrived yet, and they've gone clean. They're already, you know, ordered and claimed by other folks. And before I forget, we just did a brand new episode of I Want That earlier today. And I wanted to point out that if we have any fans out there of the Star Wars Lego set. They've got an interesting promotion going on right now that if you buy $50 worth of Star Wars Lego sets, Target will give you a free $10 gift card.
Oh, wow.
And I have to admit, I was in there looking at, everything they had. And it was one of these things where it's like, I guess because I don't have a small boy of my own, I'm not familiar with how much Lego sets are going for now.
Oh,
and Millennium Falcon, the Rise of Skywalker special edition that comes with minifigs, $159.
Oh, yeah. It is.
Oh, I mean, it is get me wrong. Beautiful. But,
and the best babysitters you can possibly get, too, by the way. Legos.
Well, that said, please, again, you're a father, and how many times have you stepped barefoot on a Lego piece?
More than I can count.
Okay.
That's the reason they call me Hop Along.
There we go. You know, just a wonderful babysitter and torture device.
We did order the Mandalorian's Lego ship set that comes with the child minifigure too. It's a beautiful looking Lego. Yeah.
Okay. Didn't see that, but I would imagine again that's also gone clean.
It's slick.
Now, now, typically, if Toy Fair had gone the way Toy Fair usually went, this year during the 2020 event, there would have been reps of Disney and Lucasfilm walking around to would-be licensees showing them storyboards and concept art from Indiana Jones 5. So they could then, get some company to pay top dollar for the right to produce toys, based on that upcoming Steven Spielberg film. But of course, now Steven Spielberg isn't directing Indiana Jones 5. James Mangold is. And how that came to happen, I'll explain in a moment.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
And all right. So again, Dan, you saw as the news on this began to break, right back on February 24th, Steven steps away, James Mangold comes in.
Is that official now, or are they still trying to work that out?
No, it's official, though. I do take some solace in the fact that Spielberg has announced he is staying on as a very hands-on producer. So he will be involved, and more to the point, he was very much involved in selecting James Mangold as his successor, for a reason we'll get to in a minute. Again, to sort of explain, how this happened, the way it happened, we have to go back to October 3rd, 2012, which of course is when Disney acquires Lucasfilm for $4 billion. Interesting thing, though, Dan, is that deal got Disney some but not all of the rights to the Indiana Jones film franchise. Now, I think we talked about this previously, how back in November of 1979, Michael Eisner, when he was president of Paramount, he's the one who brokered the deal between that studio, Steven Spielberg, and George Lucas, which would then finally allow for production of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and the language of that deal allowed for four sequels. So, and this deal was really unprecedented in Hollywood history. It called for Paramount to split Raiders receipts with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. It was a 60-40 split, with 60% going to the studio. Now, mind you, that was only till Raiders broke even or recovered all of its production costs. At that point, then Paramount, Steven, and George all split Raiders of the Lost Ark's profits equally. And but, you know, here's the thing. If you go back and read that original press release that the Walt Disney Company issued when it was acquiring Lucasfilm, it mentions new Star Wars films, with Episode 7 being targeted for release in 2015. But there, I mean, literally, you can go from top to bottom of the press release. Yeah. There's absolutely no mention of Indiana Jones.
I remember that very well.
Yeah. But again, that was because Disney had to then, before they could discuss any future films in that franchise, Disney had to open up a negotiation with Paramount. And it took the better part of 14 months to finally close this deal. But December 6, 2013, they came to an accord. Disney got the distribution and marketing rights to future Indiana Jones films, whereas Paramount held on to the original four films. Paramount would have financial participation should there be any more Indiana Jones films made. They'd get their cut. But beyond that, now Disney finally has the rights to make a fifth Indiana Jones film. But what would that film be about? Again, you've been covering Lucasfilm for a long time, so you must remember when Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes. People sometimes forget that film premiered at the Cannes Film Festival about 10 days before it was released to theaters in the States. Do you recall any of the interviews George did during that time, or?
Vaguely. I remember, George says a lot of things to a lot of different people, how he's feeling emotion. I think he means them in the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a polite way of putting it. Yes. Well, George evidently at Cannes told a reporter that they were already talking about a fifth film, and that Shia LaBeouf's Mutt Williams character would be the lead in the fifth Indiana Jones film. And what was interesting is that Harrison Ford's character would then basically assume the role that Sean Connery played in The Last Crusade. And now, mind you, again, this is May. By the end of the summer, you remember what happened with Last Crusade and kind of the hate that was thrown Shia LaBeouf's way.
Oh, you mean Crystal Skull? Yeah. Oh yeah, I do. Yeah. Although okay. I've said many times, I love Crystal Skull and I didn't mind Shia LaBeouf at all. In fact, mm-hmm. I've still maintained that Crystal Skull is my second favorite Indiana Jones movie.
Really? And number one's the original Raiders?
Or? Oh yeah. That's the number one movie of all movies, period.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. If it were me, I would be the original Raiders, Last Crusade, because, again, I love the interplay between Connery and Ford.
Yeah, me too.
And I felt like in a lot of ways that was, particularly given how really dark Temple of Doom got, that it was a kind of a welcome return to the feel of the original Raiders. Right. But yeah, I've honestly never thought beyond that point whether if I had to choose between Temple of Doom and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yeah, I guess I'd go with that would be number three. But
well, Crystal Skull is nice because the Connery and Shia LaBeouf are not Ford and Shia LaBeouf take on the Connery and Ford roles, but it's reversed where Indy has these great reveals where he realizes that this is his son. Mm-hmm. And he completely changes his philosophy of what kind of advice he gives the kid, which I think is pretty funny as a parent. Mm-hmm. Ford is at the absolute top of his game. Anytime he's on screen with Karen Allen and Crystal Skull, it's gold. And then I think the last 20 minutes when they're in the jungle up until about the end is a little off. But then the very ending with the wedding is just beautiful.
Oh, no. It does have... Well, I particularly love that moment when the hat is blown up the aisle and
oh, yeah.
you know, that Mutt's about to pick it up and Indy swoops into the last moment. Not yet, kid.
Yep.
You know,
it's perfect. It's just, I mean, if that is the last time we see Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, it's a nice send off. But I want more.
It is. Now, okay. Just to pick up, it's August of 2008. George has realized that Mutt is kind of unpopular. So he reverts to the idea of having Indy 5 built around Harrison Ford. Spielberg is at this point very open to directing an Indiana Jones 5, but with the understanding that they come up with a strong story idea. And George and Steve are still kind of smarting. I think we've gotten into this on a previous show, how because, Steven had directed Close Encounters of a Third Kind and E.T. He really wasn't all that excited about, that it had a flying saucer, that was featured prominently in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. He's like, can we not do that? Whereas George really, really, really wanted, a flying, flying saucer. In fact, the first attempt at a fourth Indiana Jones film with the script Indiana Jones and the Saucer Men. I got to get you a copy of that to read at some point, Dan. You'd find that fascinating.
Sure.
So Lucas noodles on ideas for a fifth film through much of 2009 to 2010. And you just mentioned Karen Allen. March of 2011, Karen Allen is being interviewed, and she says, someone asked, well, what's going on with Indy 5? And she says, well, Spielberg, Lucas, and Ford have finally found a story that they all like. Big step forward, and they're all working on it. On the other hand, July of 2012, Frank Marshall comes along and throws cold water on all of this because he tells a reporter that Lucasfilm is yet to hire a writer to work on the script for Indy 5. And, he says, look, I don't know if Indy 5 is definitely not happening, but without a writer assigned to develop the film's screenplay, he's very doubtful that a brand new Indiana Jones is going to go into production anytime soon. And I have to wonder, given that, just 3 months later, George is selling or signing over Lucasfilm to Disney. I got to wonder, he was in the loop, that was coming.
Right, I mean, right.
Kathleen's his wife, right?
That's true. But, it's in the vault. He must have signed an NDA.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Those niggling little NDAs. All right. All right. Anyway, as the deal is closing, Disney studio chief Alan Horn warns entertainment reporters, who are covering the story that, look, and again, we're talking about the deal in December of 2013 at this point with Paramount. Alan's warning, entertainment reporters, like, look, we're concentrating all of our efforts right now on launching a brand new Star Wars trilogy, so which means that it's going to be at least 2 and 3 years before, Disney gets around to producing a new Indiana Jones film. And now where this gets interesting is in late 2015. Based on the success of Guardians of the Galaxy, which was released to theaters in August of 2014, and the original Jurassic World, which was out in theaters in June of 2015, evidently there were executives at Disney who gave very serious thought to rebooting Indiana Jones with Chris Pratt playing the title role. How do you feel about that, Dan?
I was actually championing that. I thought it would have been great. He had the right kind of demeanor and smarminess, and he had that look. I would have been very okay with it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because if you think about it, Paramount had just done something similar with J.J. Abrams' Star Trek reboot, hiring Chris Pines to play Captain Kirk, the role that William Shatner had originated for the television series in the first set of movies, and likewise Zachary Quinto playing Commander Spock, the Leonard Nimoy role, though Leonard still managed to find a way to get into that movie. And that did so well when it was released to theaters in May of 2009. We got two sequels. What is it? Star Trek Into Darkness, May of 2013, and Star Trek Beyond, out in theaters in July of 2016. And as recently as this week. They're evidently talking about making a fourth Star Trek film with Pine and Quinto returning as Kirk and Spock. Did you get to manage to see any of those? Or
I saw the first two and I absolutely loved them. In fact, that was the first time I really saw Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Khan on the second one. I thought they were brilliant, really fun. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the third one. That was, I know, J.J. Liss, but I didn't see that one.
Okay. Good. You know, again, it shows up on cable. So if you got 2 hours at some point, grab it. I'm sharing this story, which somebody told me in confidence at Disney, because it really kind of gives me a lot of respect for Chris Pratt, who evidently loves the Indiana Jones films. I guess reached out to the Disney executives who were floating the idea of him coming in to play Indy. And it's just sort of like, I loved these films as a kid and I don't want to be the one to tank them, you know? And I just saw what happened with Shia LaBeouf and how people seem to get really angry at any actor who seems to be taking, the Indiana Jones jobs away from Harrison Ford. So maybe withdraw my name. The fact that he did that supposedly himself, not some studio head.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's gotta be a hard one, especially when he's at the peak of his powers.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, when an actor understands, you know, both himself and the way the industry works, I mean, there's this story I love about Tom Hanks, where Universal wanted to remake Harvey. Do you know the Jimmy Stewart movie, Harvey?
Oh, yeah, the big rabbit.
There you go. Okay. And, so Universal wanted to remake it, and they brought it to Spielberg, and he's like, oh, I know the perfect guy. We have to go with Tom Hanks. And so, you know, and because Steven loves working with Tom, and, and when you think about, the roles that Tom has played, just recently Mr. Rogers and, Walt Disney and Saving Mr. Banks. I mean, he's kind of America's decent guy. Yeah. And so he'd be perfect for Elwood P. Dowd. And so they go to Tom Hanks and he's like, no, I love Jimmy Stewart's performance. I could never do better than that. And it would ruin my own memories of a film I really, really love. So it's like, I know you're piling up all sorts of money and we'll all get very rich, even more rich than we are now. But no, I don't want to do Harvey, or, I shouldn't do Harvey. And he didn't do Harvey. So for a Chris Pratt to say, no, I shouldn't be Indiana Jones.
It's I think that's bold. It's a very bold choice.
This is true. So, right. We now jump ahead. Fall of 2015, Kathleen Kennedy steps out and says, okay, I'll admit it. We got a fifth Indiana Jones film in development. Steven Spielberg has once again expressed an interest in directing said sequel. And, the fans shouldn't worry. Indiana Jones will definitely be played in this film by Harrison Ford. And then March of 2016, Disney gets even more definitive about Indiana Jones 5. They may not have a script, but they have a release date, which is July 19th, 2019. So anticipating a spring of 2018 start of production, Spielberg clears his schedule for that chunk of time. But then in April 2017, Disney has to admit that they're still struggling to come up with a serviceable script for the sequel. So Indiana Jones release date then gets pushed back to July 10th, 2020. Spielberg moves quickly. He's able to fill this hole in his dance card, which he had deliberately set aside to do pre-production on Indy 5. This is when he shoots The Post. Did you see that? The 20th Century film about the Pentagon Papers with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks?
I saw it. I loved it. I think it's a borderline perfect movie just for what it's brilliant.
Yeah. And again, if you're somebody who loves old time both, you know, political films like, you know, All the President's Men, or,
yeah,
you know, just films that take you behind the scenes at newspapers. It's wonderful.
It really is.
It was also shot crazy fast. They began shooting it May 3rd, 2017. The film was, you know, wrapped by July and out in theaters that same year in December. Which, you know,
stunning.
But again, I'm sorry.
It's stunning. I mean, that's just, that's rap. I mean, you're also talking about some of the best actors of all time in that thing too, which helps.
Oh yeah. You know, there isn't a bad performance in the thing, but again, Spielberg, you know, having come out of television, you know, remember one of his, you know, very first gigs was shooting Joan Crawford in Night Gallery. You know, he liked to shoot fast. His first theatrical release, Sugarland Express, was shot in 55 days. The original Raiders, you know, amazing action film, locations around the world, shot only in 73 days. And Last Crusade, the bulk of Last Crusade, Dan, was shot in 63 days in the summer of 1988.
Wow.
So, which is crazy. But, you know, so here's this guy who likes to work fast. And meanwhile, Indiana Jones 5 is moving so slowly around Disney's development track, which is why in June of 2018, release date gets pushed off yet again. Now it's July 9th of 2021. And Steven has actually begun to wonder, is he ever actually going to get the chance to shoot the fifth film in this series? And so, to fill this brand new hole in his schedule, Steven actually turns to the movie he had set up to be his follow-up to Indy 5, and that was a big-screen musical version of the 1957 Broadway hit West Side Story, which, you know, it actually had already been made as a movie. Robert Rice and Jerome Robbins directed that in 1961, won all sorts of Academy Awards. But doing a full-fledged movie musical was on Spielberg's bucket list. So he jumps into the assignment with enthusiasm. They shoot West Side Story largely on location in New York City and northern New Jersey from July 19th of last year through September 27, 2019. But here's the thing. He's on the set with all of these ridiculously long young singers and dancers, you know, kids who are 18, 19, 20. They're dynamic. They're energetic. Whereas Spielberg, Dan, he turned 73 on December 18th of last year. And Harrison Ford turned 77 in July of last year. Now, mind you, again, we've all seen the photograph of you know, at the premiere of, you know, the Rise of Skywalker, and he looks great. He really does. But he's still a 77-year-old guy. And George, who turned 75 in May of last year, you know, he's supposedly the smart one. He's retired from the business and is out working on his museum. Spielberg, you know, look, they made the original Raiders back in 1980. That's 40 years ago. And Spielberg, especially after seeing all these kids jump around at doing West Side Story and all that, began to worry that he and Harrison were going to look ridiculous if they tried to do with this character what they'd done 40 years ago, that just wasn't realistic. But Steven remembered a movie that he'd seen just a couple of years ago. Logan, have you seen this? The sort of the story of the older yes. Wolverine?
Yeah, it's a really dark, intense film. Definitely not for kids, but it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it takes two characters that you know from the X-Men, Wolverine, Logan, and, you know, Professor Charles Xavier, Professor X. And, you know, it gets absolutely marvelous performances out of Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart that are true to these characters' actual age. And that's evidently the conversation that Spielberg had with Disney. It's like, look, we're trying to make an Indiana Jones film like it's 1980s again and it's Raiders again, and that's just not going to work. But if we do an Indiana Jones film where Indy is Harrison's actual age, he's 77, and how does one have an adventure when they're 77? And, you know, the guy who figured that out is James Mangold, the guy who did Logan. So maybe we should give this movie to him. So you know, and again, I mean, I get what you're saying. I get how it's disappointing, you know, especially after there've been these four films and you were looking forward to the band getting back together again.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really going to be the band again, because George wasn't going to be involved. So I guess for me, you know, and again, it's kind of interesting, you know, Harrison, you know, was out there doing publicity for Call of the Wild as recently as last month. And he was talking about how we're going to be shooting in a couple of months, and which insinuated April. And from what friends at Disney have told me is that Mangold, he not only directed, you know, that film, he also wrote the original story and then developed the screenplay for Logan with Scott Frank and Michael Green. So he wants to, before they start shooting this thing, have a swing at sort of adjusting the screenplay. So it looks more like now Indy 5 is going to go for before the cameras this summer rather than this spring. So
as long as I get it made sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, again, okay, long story short, folks, Dan and I will try to keep you up to date as we hear more about this project. You know, so will you be discussing Indy 5 over at Coffee with Kenobi, or?
Well, we did talk about it on our Patreon show, CWK Pour Over. We did a show where we talked about that and Project Luminous. Mm-hmm. But the main show will stick to the Star Wars thing. We'll leave the Indiana Jones talk to looking at Lucasfilm with the two of us, and then Ed Dolst is great, the IndieCast, which is the best Indiana Jones podcast out there.
Cool. Now, up to anything special over at Coffee Kenobi, because you usually have such great guests.
Well, thank you. We just had 2 weeks ago, we had James Arnold Taylor, voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi. We did a deep dive with him about just sort of the history of the project and his career, and he's just a great, generous guy anyway, so he's always fun to talk to. Mm-hmm. And then we've reviewed the first couple episodes. We try to put those out pretty punctually, and then we also did a big deep dive on Project Luminous as well.
Very cool. Okay, well, at the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, I mean, you know, that's we've managed to work The Mandalorian into a lot of shows. I think we've talked about it over at Disney Dish with Len Testa, and I know Drew and I have talked about it on fine tuning. I think Michelle, just today when we were recording I Want That, we were talking a little bit about Toy Fair and the Baby Yoda stuff that showed up there. Excuse me, the child. I gotta remember to say the child. I don't know. I think we have talked about it on Marvelous Disney with Aaron Adams, because we do a lot of talk about the limited series that Disney Plus is doing. One show we haven't talked Star Wars stuff about lately, is Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse. But who knows? That could change anytime. Tell you what, folks, by the way, if you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to iTunes and not only rate Looking at Lucasfilm, but also Coffee with Kenobi, that helps get us extra ears and eyeballs. And if you like what you're listening to tonight, if you could subscribe over at Bandcamp, that would be very helpful. What about social media for Coffee with Kenobi? I know you're all over Twitter. I love so much of the stuff you post over there on Twitter.
Well, thank you. Yeah, Coffee with Kenobi on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, mm-hmm. on Pinterest. You can chat with me personally at Mr. Zehr, MRZEHR, on Twitter as well.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Jim Hill Media, we do Twitter and Instagram. And over at Facebook, we are Jim Hill Media News. I don't know why, but that's it. But
it's a good place to go.
I don't know. Nancy made the decision. I trust Nancy. We'll go with that. And speaking of going, folks, it's a school night. So Dan has to work in the morning and so do I. So we're going to shut down here. But thanks for listening. And we will be back with more Lucasfilm-related news in the not-too-distant future. But till then, take care.